Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services. Walker Medical Linen specializes in bed linens, towels, scrubs, and lab coats. Family owned and operated for over 140 years. Find out why hospitals of all sizes, surgery centers, and medical clinics trust Walker Medical Linen. Online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's Tuesday, November 15th, 2022. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Marco Marquez. And now we're going to be joined by wide receiver, former Chiefs wide receiver, and current Border Patrol wide receiver, Mark Boerichter. Mark, let's start off with some gossip. Or as okay. Nate likes to say, let's talk poop. Here is NFL senior reporter Jeremy Fowler, who was on ESPN yesterday talking about Odell Beckham Jr.
Certainly, by the end of the month, we'd have some clarity. I would think around Thanksgiving, closer to early December, for him to give himself to get a chance to get healthy. Contenders are on the table. I don't get the sense after asking around that he's limited things to, you know, a small list of three teams, let's say. But they have to be a contender. That's why the Rams are tricky, right? Like a lot of people I talked to thought a month ago that he was going back to L.A. Well, they're losing, and they kind of insulted him with their initial offer, it sounds like, months back. So that one's not looking great. Now, maybe if Cooper Kupp's out for a long time, they can persuade him, you know, to come and be the guy. But, I have heard a decent amount of Chiefs. I was at a game last week and heard, you know, multiple, like, agents and people talking about the Chiefs for some reason. So I think they're at least one to watch right now. They just did a Kadarius Toney deal. They have a lot of options. I don't know if they want to stretch the salary cap and go get him.
Mark Boerichter, respond to that report, please.
Just sounds like a bunch of PR to me. That being said, I don't, you know, it's not like he couldn't be a weapon for this team, obviously, on things, but coming off an injury, things like that, I just don't see this team making that type of move unless there's another long-term injury potentially to a guy here. I think the Chiefs like where they're at on things. Obviously, they've got a few injuries with Mecole Hardman and some stuff there, but I just don't see the reasoning for it. But I think if the price was right, you certainly would look at it. But I just don't think that what Odell Beckham Jr. is going to want is going to merit, sacrificing your salary cap here for potentially years to come. On a guy, I like the player a lot. There's nothing wrong with him as a player, but there's been a lot of rumors out there over the last several weeks, and you know, I think the destination of the Rams was one that a lot of people thought was still going to end up happening. And of course, we've seen where their record is at this point. At this point, too, this late in the season, he's going to want to go to a contender in some capacity. I just don't think it's going to be Kansas City. So I think Chiefs fans should pump the brakes on their potential excitement about that. But we'll see. Who knows?
All right. What about Nate Bucati? What do you say about that, Nate?
Well, I don't know. Considering some of the – I don't know how serious the injury is going to be to Juju Smith-Schuster, how long he's going to be out. Hopefully it's not very long. I kind of don't see a need for it right now, and maybe that's silly. Maybe having another playmaker like Odell Beckham Jr. could be the one difference when you get to the Super Bowl, but this offense is awesome. Like, as it is, it's great. I'm kind of with you, Mark. I feel pretty good about where they are right now.
Well, I feel good about where they're at right now. And here's the thing, too. Like, I think sometimes, you know, with Odell Beckham Jr., we saw how his time ended in New York. We saw how his time ended in Cleveland. You know, I think at this point in his career, sometimes it takes a guy being moved a couple different times, right, or not being wanted a couple different times to come back and be more motivated. I think we saw that last year, of course, with the Rams in his regard. And so when I say that, like, I think he's matured. I really do, okay, from from having to deal with all the shenanigans that went on with him before. But at the same time, you know, do you want to tip, quote, the apple cart in your locker room? I think you always want playmakers, but is it going to be a media circus around, well, here's Odell Beckham Jr. now, and because of his name, all the questions and everything else turns to that as opposed to the focus of finishing out the season? And, you know, injuries do play a part in that, which also, Nate, you know, since you brought up the Juju and the situation with him and that hit last week, you know, the Chiefs are one or two more injuries away on from the receiver side of things for all of a sudden this conversation heating up even further, right? Like, that's truly where they're at. But if everything's the same as it is right now, and when I say the same, stays as it is, where Juju comes back here in a couple weeks or whatever, Mecole Hardman gets back, I think this team is just fine offensively right now. I don't think they need to make a move just to make a move for him.
Mark Boerigeur is our guest. Well, you know, Kadarius Toney comes in, and people wonder where's his snaps going to come from, and you know how they can utilize him. And we've seen Sky Moore, for whatever reason, and we can get into that because I know Nate wants to talk about that, not be able to carve out a role on the offense. So are you surprised how quickly do we over-exaggerate how long it takes to figure out a playbook? When Andy Reid wants to find someone the opportunity to get some touches, he could do it pretty easily, it seems like, right? I mean, if he wants you to get the ball, he's going to find a way to get you the ball, whether you know the playbook or not.
Yeah, I think here's the deal. I think we need to pump the brakes on Kadarius Toney. And when I say pump the brakes, like, I like what I've seen a lot from him early on here. But, you know, what they've done here over the first 2 weeks, I think he only had five snaps, this first week here. I can't remember what he had this past week. But he is a very sudden player. He changes direction extremely fast. Can, you know, get in and out of his breaks really, really quickly. But they don't have this huge package of plays in for him yet. Obviously, he had a couple of big catches on Sunday. One, he's wide open on the touchdown that even Mahomes was like, that's not the guy we were originally supposed to throw the football to anyway. So a product of that, I don't want to call it luck, but a product of that is obviously how Jacksonville played the defense. So it's not necessarily, I think, that they're dedicated and trying to get the ball to him. It's just putting him into some situations. It takes time in this offense to acclimate yourself as a wide receiver. It does. We've talked about this. There's a lot of freedom involved with it. But if you're dialing up, you know, 3 or 4 plays a game for Kadarius Toney right now where he's the primary receiver, then great. And that may be all it is. It may be all it is. We just happen to see, you know, several of those on Sunday. The Sky Moore situation is interesting to me. I still like him as a player. It's way too early for us to sit here and call him a bust by any means. I think they're working him in. I think they're trying to figure out within this offense what he does best. You know, there is an adjustment process for a rookie wide receiver coming into this league with the speed of the game and with this type of offense that has as much freedom as it does to understand coverages, understand how to get open at a higher level. That takes a little bit of time. So I think we need to, you know, just sit back and let him develop. When I say that is not that you know, he's not going to be an integral part of this offense, but there's a role for him here. It's just kind of undefined yet.
Nate Bucati.
What role does Sky Moore have on this team right now?
Right now, I think he's a backup wide receiver, obviously, just to state it as simply as possible, who's learning this game and learning the offense. And I think going forward, he can be an integral part of this. I think we also need to look at this in terms of 2023, right? Like, you drafted Sky Moore in the second round. It's an opportunity, I think, because of where he's drafted. Everybody had higher expectations. What we saw in training camp with him getting off press coverage, things like that. You know, we're halfway through the season right now, the true halfway point, just over the halfway point. And this is somewhere sometimes where that rookie wall comes into play. But I think with bringing in MBS and with bringing in Juju Smith-Schuster and – Watson, who has experience, and then you have Mecole Hardman. I mean, there's your four guys. You can allow a guy like Sky Moore to develop. And so his role in this team, I think, is not that we're just pushing everything to 2023, but I think from a receiver standpoint, it's to be a wide receiver that's going to play more down the stretcher. We are going to see more of him in that aspect, and they have to be comfortable putting him out there. I think part of the Sky Moore conversation comes back to the fact that they've put him back there to return punts, and it hasn't gone well, right? So I think a lot of people's judgment of him just as a wide receiver in general have been clouded a little bit by his struggles in the return game.
We have a former Chiefs wide receiver Mark Boerichter on the line. Okay, Mark, you know, Tremmy Duffy was hurt most of the season. The sample size is growing. He gave up his first catch on Sunday against Jacksonville, but he was still really good. And then he had a nice breakup in the fourth quarter that forced a punt. Based on what we've seen so far, man, it looks like he looks like a CB1. What have you thought about Trent McDuffie?
Well, I think coming back, obviously, of being on the IR from injury, he's – I don't think we necessarily knew what to expect from him coming back off of that, especially off a hamstring injury. But I what I've seen over the last couple of weeks, you know, this past week he looked more comfortable than he did the week before. He looks every bit the part. Let's remember, too, with him – a lot of high expectations, obviously, first-round pick. I think he's a tremendous player. I think he's going to be a tremendous player here. The last week was only his third regular season NFL game, right? Because you played, you know, got hurt week one. There, you can see all the tools there. You can see it, and I think you're going to see his confidence continue to grow as he feels healthy here. But he's also going to get, you know, some guys' best shot because they're going to look to try to pick on some corners. Now, that being said, I think it's a great thing because the Chiefs are playing so many rookies out there and young guys in the secondary that it might spare him a few targets that are coming his direction. But he looked to me every bit the part on Sunday, and I think it's only going to get better.
So while we're talking about these rookies, I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are on George Karlaftis so far. He only has a half a sack on the season, but I was reading some tweets over the weekend that Matt McMullen put out there that he's tied with Aiden Hutchinson for the most pressures among all rookie defenders. Had a couple of passes that he batted down in the game over the weekend. Where are we on what we've seen from Karlaftis so far in this rookie campaign?
I like what I've seen from him. Yeah, he's only second among rookie pass rushers, Aiden Hutchinson, you know, in quarterback pressures. The sacks haven't been there yet. That's okay. I think the one thing that I've noticed, and I think I've said this on the pregame show a couple weeks ago, is, you know, they're kind of using him a lot in the NASCAR package, what I call the NASCAR package, which is what I shouldn't say I call it that. That's what Steve Spagnuolo called it and coined back when he was with the defense coordinator of the Giants, where they're actually putting Karlaftis over the nose in passing situations. You're putting a guy where sometimes he's getting double-teamed up in there. There's been other times they're running a lot of stunts up front, so ETs and TEs, where you'll see him actually kind of being the lead guy in that. So if it's, you know, an ET, the end is going inside first, the tackle's looping around, where he's the guy going inside trying to take up some blockers and free up other guys. If you watch the film of it, especially over the last couple of weeks, that's been a package they'd like to do. And that's where he's playing, and he's playing that role. He's going to get there. He's going to get there. I think it's always an adjustment period, too, when, you know, you've got a guy who obviously is drafted in the first round, but you're playing against NFL-quality left tackles for the most part every single week, right? And so it becomes difficult. You know, your game has to raise up. Your technique has to get better. And it's rare. You just don't see a lot of rookie defensive ends come in and just take this league by storm all of a sudden. Like, we go play these next eight games here, and he goes and gets four or five sacks. Now he's got 5.5 sacks on the year. Is that a good year for a rookie defensive end? Absolutely. Absolutely. So I like the way he's playing. The one thing that obviously has always been a strength of his is his motor. That continues to be a strength of his, but they're using him in some different types of situation where he's just not one-on-one on the outside. They're using Chris Jones, bumping Chris Jones outside, moving Carl Offit inside in those passing situations.
We have Mark Boerichter on the line right now. Mark, are you concerned at all about the special teams miscues as of late?
Yes, I am. I've been concerned about them for a while. You know, a one-off here or there, it happens. But they have not looked great special teams-wise all the way across the board, right? It's been inconsistent in the kicking game. They've been inconsistent in the return game. I know a lot of people think there was a miscue last week, the first punt. That was actually a smart play when, you know, the punt team actually touched the ball first. You can advance it as a punt return team, but no penalty to yourself. So go ahead and try to pick it up there in that situation. That's just the rule. That was actually a smart play. It didn't look like it when it first happened, but that's actually a smart play. But there's just too many miscues going on all the way around. And I think, you know, I played in this era, as you guys know, with Dante Hall, where every time they kicked the football to him, it was almost this expectation that we were going to take it back to the house. Well, the era of the return game has kind of left the building. You just don't see very many kickoff or punt returns return for touchdowns anymore. Part of it is the rule changes to the kickoffs. But then the other portion of it is, you know, just coverage guys being a lot better and the schemes changing and what you can do and how you can block, you know. Can't blindside block guys anymore on different things. So it's more difficult to return kicks in this league now too. But there's just too many miscues that are happening that are fixable, whether it's taking care of the football, whether it's not holding guys, whether, you know, there's just too many of those things. And this team has to be better at it. They're turning the football too much, and the majority of that has come from special teams, at least the ones that can really break your back. So they've got to clean some things up there for sure.
I'm stunned by that. You know, considering Dave Tobe's been here as long as he has, and it's always been a strength of the team. How do you explain it? I mean, how does the team all of a sudden take this big of a step back on special teams?
He lost a bunch of guys from last year, though, right, Mark? I mean, that's one of the big things.
That's what I was just going to say, Stephen, was, you know, we made fun a lot over the last couple of years of why Dan Sorensen was on this roster, right? I think most of that was more so about why is he playing on defense. But why was Anthony Sherman on this roster for so long as a fullback? You know, why was Ben Neiman on this roster for so long? You know, the argument around some of those guys is, you know, why, especially, you know, Dan Sorensen and Ben Neiman is why were they playing so much on defense? But those were core special team guys, and they were veteran guys who have been around this league and understand what it takes to play special teams. And I'm not saying these young guys don't know what that takes right now, but there is a learning curve to it also in terms of what you're seeing, how to study and take your role seriously as a special teams guy as well. And so I think that's a big portion of it. I think there's a lot of young guys playing special teams right now that are inexperienced. And when I say inexperienced, remember, most of these guys drafted, you got drafted and you played defense. Most of you didn't play special teams in college because you were a starter. But when you come to the National Football League, you have to do that. And I think that's an adjustment period.
All right. Another interesting storyline from the game was the running back situation. Isaiah Pacheco had a productive day, although he did lose a fumble. Jerick McKinnon had a good day as a pass receiver, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire did not get a touch. And at one point, I had to make sure: is he inactive? Is he playing? And then I saw him in there a couple of times. Is that just riding the hot hand? Is that just okay? This is what we like in the matchup, or is he just being phased out of this offense?
That's a good question that I haven't yet figured out. I think we see the preference in, you know, I take what Andy Reid says with a grain of salt every time he's at the podium because a lot of times he doesn't say a whole lot. But I think it was telling, I believe it was in the 49ers game when they named Pacheco the starter. But this little tidbit did strike with me is like we started him because we wanted to make sure we got him his touches early on. And they've been on this three running back rotation, which has been a decent amount of production between the three of them. I think they're riding a hot hand right now. I think they like the way he's playing. Jerick McKinnon is clearly their, you want to call him your traditional third down back, but your second and third down back, who in the passing game is the guy that I like to have in there, both for pass protection because he's good at it, and also the way he can catch the ball out of the backfield. It's a little perplexing that Clyde Edwards-Helaire did not get more snaps last week. But I think when you're in a three running back rotation, sometimes there has to be an odd man out on some things. And right now, he seems like the guy that's on the outside looking in. I know there's been a lot of talk, obviously, of Ronald Jones still sitting inactive every single week. But they're going to need all three of those guys down the stretch. So I'm not going to – until we see here maybe another week or two with Clyde kind of being the third guy and it being extremely, lopsided in terms of the amount of snaps, then we can really start having that conversation.
Nate Buchanan, your final thoughts.
Well, let's look ahead here, Mark, to this matchup against the L.A. Chargers on Sunday Night Football. I think on paper it all looked like it was going to be a big matchup, and I guess maybe it still is, but it's all of a sudden a matchup where the Chiefs can, like, finish the division, it seems like, with a win, and they're even more banged up by far than the Chiefs are. How much of a game do you expect this one to be?
I think it's going to be a lot better than people think. And when I say what people say, just based on what the Chargers record is right now, this is the one divisional opponent I think you worry about. If you're the Chiefs, I think it's the one divisional opponent that they've worried about over the last 3-4 years. And I'm not making fun of the fact that a lot of people have picked the Chargers, to finally unseat the Chiefs as the AFC West champs. Just that this is a big one on the road that you have to go get if you're the Chiefs. You have to, as my coach Dick Vermeil, Hall of Famer Dick Vermeil, he say, keep losing teams losing. And this is an opportunity for you to do that. Really go up three games in the division and not clinch the division yet by any means, but really put yourself completely in the driver's seat where everybody's chasing you even further. And just put the division to bed, because I feel like you can really do that this week by winning this game on the road. When you look at the two Chiefs losses, guys, by a combined 7 points this year, right? So this team is extremely good, the Chiefs are. They are rolling right now. They need to continue rolling. And, a couple weeks ago we talked about this stretch of games looked like it was going to be a difficult one with Tennessee. We didn't necessarily think Jacksonville would be, but the Chargers and then the Rams afterwards. Well, both the LA teams right now are down and really hurting. So I guess what I'm trying to get at, this is a game you have to take advantage of if you're the Chiefs, because the Chargers are so banged up. I would expect, I think, just me looking at this, if you're the Chargers, this is a must-win game for the Chargers. So I would expect that Keenan Allen and Mike Williams might be pushed to come play faster than they'd want to in this game, because this is a do or die for the Chargers right now. It's not for the Chiefs, but it is for the Chargers. So you've got an injured puppy over there in Los Angeles right now that's going to try to fight its way back, and you basically have to let it nurse itself back to health as opposed to fighting its way back.
Mark, thank you for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, fellas.
That is Mark Boerichter, who joins us every Tuesday right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the show. One of my favorite songs, one of my mother's favorite songs. Play it.
Save me from this prison. Lord.
Nate, did you know? You probably didn't even know. Did you? Did you? Or did you not know?
Did I know that this was one of your favorite songs?
No. Did you know it's the 24th annual Sports Radio 810 Food Drive, silly?
Oh, I did know that.
I'm going to quiz you and see if you've listened to me talk about this for the last 2 days. Where will donations be accepted throughout Kansas City?
Aldi.
Aldi what?
Aldi food stores.
Aldi grocery stores, yes. You could drop off non-perishable items. What do you look for when you go to Aldi to drop the items in?
The back courtesy bowl.
You do not go to Aldi and drop items inside of a courtesy bowl.
Yes.
This is how you look for courtesy bowl.
Anyway, that'd be a hell of a promotion if you're dropping right. items inside of them, but that's, well, you know, another story. You look. Thank you. I needed a little laugh. I needed a little chuckle. Thank you. The 810 bins is what you're looking for, Nate.
Mercedes?
To drop items in. Okay? Drop items in the 810 bins at all Kansas City area Aldi grocery stores. You know, you can stretch your donation farther by shopping at Aldi. And when you're out shopping for all your Thanksgiving goodies, grab a few extra items and drop them in the 810 collection box at your local Aldi so you can help make someone's holiday special this year, okay? Aldi, shop differently. And look here. Here's the deal. If we get it, if you can't make it out to an Aldi, we'd love it if you went to Aldi and dropped off some non-perishable items. But if you can't, we've made it simple for you. Just go online to 810whb.com/food drive, and you can make a donation. Make a $20 donation, and you'll receive one entry to the raffle to give away a signed Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid photo. Someone's going to win this picture, this framed photo of Andy Reid watching Patrick Mahomes throw a pass, and they both signed it. And so for every $20 donation you make, you'll get one entry to win the photo. If you donate more, you get more entries. Example, donate $100, get 5 entries, because 100 divided by 20 equals 5. How you like me now?
What?
So I'm showing off now with math. So you can do that. You could also take part in the online auction. Again, go to 810whb.com. So I'll do this together, Marco, Nate. Go to 810whb.com/food drive. Okay, we're going to walk this through together because I don't want to tell the listeners to do something that we don't do. So you eight and huh? You guys do that yet?
Yes.
Todd Lebo just snuck up on me.
Wow, what'd he do?
He touched me. Snuck up on me and...
What is that? He just sneaks up on you and touches you?
Yes.
What the hell's that all about?
I don't know, but it scared me.
Right. Seems odd. Okay, so then you go, then you're at the page. It says 810 Food Drive Auction. It gives you all the information on how to donate in person or online here. And then at the very bottom, silent auction, bid now. Click on that. I just clicked on bid. Oh, I'm in an online auction now. Look at that. Technology. Patrick Mahomes signed helmet. There, the Travis Kelce signed CPAC has gone up now. It was at $75. Now it's at $200. That's where it should be. But it's not enough. Ah, see? In the 6 o'clock hour, the Isaiah Pacheco signed football was at $50. Now it's at $200. Look at our influence. Now, hold on, people. The George Karloftis signed mini helmet is still at $70. That's not enough. Mm-mm. And it's a gold Chiefs helmet. The Willie Gay Jr. signed football is up to $80. The Mecole Hardman Super Bowl LIV signed picture framed is only at $75. The Nick Bolton signed jersey sits at $200. Make this happen. Okay? He was a Barry Odom recruit. Make it happen, people.
Not a good ones. Not a lot of good ones out there, but he's one of them.
Actually, there are some good ones out there, sir. I'll tell you, Tyler Beatty was one of them, too. We're not going to get into that now. So Jake Wentz has leaned on some very good recruits for success. So, but you know what? The future is bright, supposedly. Hey, what about the Bobby Witt Jr. autograph bet, $200? The Len Dawson autograph jersey with the Hall of Fame 87 inscription is still only $325. Look, I'm telling you when you can get a deal for Christmas. There's no bids on the MJ Melendez autograph picture. Is this kid not a future star? Andy Rogers said he was untradeable, untouchable.
Untouchable.
Like Elliot Ness, untouchable.
Yeah, but this picture's touchable. All you got to do is put in a good bid.
Marco bid on it. Bid on it and give it to your dad.
You know what? I have a paycheck envelope with the name Stephen St. John on it.
Ooh,
I may.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, I got something you can bid on right
mm-hmm.
here. Like a Nate's. Mm-hmm. Like you're really signing off on that.
Yeah, he
mm-hmm.
does.
And how. Boy, does he. What about, look, I'm just, someone bid on the Clyde Edwards-Helaire helmet. Don't do this.
You could give it to me as a present. You know, you could bid on it and give it to me. I've always been the Clyde Edwards-Helaire defender
right.
around here.
And it's a white helmet with the red logo.
I like that white helmet. I think that's signed, one that should always have been the alternate helmet if the Chiefs ever did one, which they don't seem to ever want to do.
And it's signed in red ink. It's beautiful. It looked great on your mantle. And so, but remember, okay, remember thou art mortal. Remember, here I go again. This is the money and the food and your donations. All right, where do you think they go? Bishop Sullivan Center in Mission Southside. So that's a big deal, and you're helping people. So go bid on these items, would you please? I mean, do it for me. Do it for Nate. Don't do it for Marco. But most importantly, do it for the people that you're going to help.
Just
that's
do it.
That's what we're doing this for. All right, you can make Thanksgiving better for people that deserve it. And all you have to do is bid on these items. I'm begging you. If I could physically get on my hands and knees, I would. But then Susan would have to help me up. So I don't know if I could. Well, whatever. Just take a break on that note. Was that an impassioned plea, Nate, or not?
It was very impassioned, and you've got me motivated. I've already made a bid on something, but I'm not telling anybody what it is.
No, see, that's not the game we play.
That is the game
people
I'm
will
playing.
Not bid you because if you bid on something and then they want to bid against you, it's like bidding against the big boys. Look, then they're in the club. What'd you just bid on?
As the DOC said, this is serious business.
Yeah. What did you bid on?
I'm not telling you.
I can figure it out. I'm looking at all the bids right now. You didn't bid on nothing.
Yes, I did.
Pacheco?
Nope.
Clyde?
I'm not telling you. Just back off. You need to bid on the Clyde thing and give it to me as a present.
He wants that Bolton jersey.
Oh, is that you're trying to get that Bolton jersey, aren't you? Yeah, boy. Get that and you can tackle people. Go tackle Kelly. Wear that Bolton jersey. You probably shut my mic
yes,
off.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Point is, go to 810whb.com/food drive and help us raise money for, and also don't forget to drop off those non-perishable items at Aldi in the 810 bins, not Curtis Siebold like Nate suggested. But this helps Bishop Sullivan Center and Mission Southside, 810whb.com/food drive. Back after this on the Border Patrol. Welcome back to the Border Patrol Sports Radio 810 WHB. So apparently Susan St. John's listening to the show. She said, tell Marco I'm on my way to get that envelope with your name on it. So she heard that. And then she also was listening to us talk about the auction. A lot of great auction. What did you bid on, Nate? Tell me.
I'm not telling you.
Susan wants to know if she could bid on a double XL Travis Kelce jersey in a paper sack for my head. What? What's that? I don't. Okay. That's somewhat insulting. But...
Hey, whatever it takes, man.
Tell Susan I'm thinking. Oh,
now I get it. Now I understand. Well, I love her, but, you know, somewhat hurtful. We'll throw in the paper sack for free, Sue. It'll be double XL. Just poke two holes for my eyes so I can see. Let's hear. Why don't we hear from Jerick McKinnon? How about that? Jerick McKinnon maybe is not appreciated enough for his role in this offense. He spoke to the media yesterday. And McKinnon says that the running back by committee is working out well.
You know, like you said, obviously it's different when you're by committee and then a starter. But, I'm going on year 9. And, you got to approach every game as if you're the starter. You know, that's just got to be your mindset. And that's what makes it easier, you know, being in the committee. Obviously, you know, it's a share amongst, you know, the backs who are in the room. But, you know, each and every one of us have to have that mindset that, you know, we're preparing as a starter because, you know, as you've seen this year, you know, everybody's had their strides and, you never really know, you know, whose game is going to be. And like I said before, with everybody contributing to the catching game, you know, it's hard to plan. You know, one game might be Pop, one game might be Clyde, one game might be me. But it's definitely been easy for us as a group to hone in those things because we work so good. As a collective unit, you know, I said it all throughout camp, you know, we're pushing each other to be better, not just in camp, but it's something that's continued forward. And I think it's showing, you know, when that person gets their number called, they've risen to the occasion. And it's just a contest to, you know, our coach, Greg Lewis, and then, you know, everybody in the room, you know, knowing the situation and, you know, where the number's called, being available and being ready to make the play. And it showed.
Go ahead, Todd.
Jerick, yesterday Juju got hurt on that play with the helmets collide. You were right there next to it. One of the first guys to wave the medical crew out there. Can you just take me through emotionally what you're seeing there on the helmet to helmet when you watch the replays and your guy is down on the ground? Yeah. And kind of like, I guess, the deal you guys make with yourselves that you're going to go out there and do this game that something like that can happen on?
You know, it's an unfortunate play. And, you know, like, you know, Pat said it out there, you know, all through training camp, you know, they're giving us these tutorials and videos, you know, the new rules and what they're trying to take away from the game and, you know, things of that nature. So, you know, I feel like on that part, you know, the refs, they got to do their job as well. But, you know, for whatever reason, we didn't get the penalty, you know, whatever, we can't change it now, but, you know, you never want to see not just your teammate, but anybody, you know, that down on the field in that type of form of fashion. So, you know, I think everybody took that to heart on our team. You know, Juju, he's a new guy, but, you know, the energy that he's brought, the plays that he's made, coming in year one, different offense, and just, you know, being a spark for us and being a player that he is, you know, everybody definitely took, you know, Juju's one of the leaders, man. You know, he's outspoken, you know, every day, you know, he's clowning, but he comes to work. So he definitely has that respect amongst everybody in the building. So to see him down like that is something that, you know, we definitely didn't want to see. So, you know, in that moment, all we could do was, you know, give him help and make sure that he was good. And then, you know, after that, you know, you kind of feel, you know, we already was playing with a chip on our shoulders, but you can feel the wave take another leap, you know, like, all right, that's what this is. All right, we got to come together and we got to really battle for real now. So, you know, that's all it was, but, you know, he's doing better. And, you know, I'm glad that it wasn't, you know, something more serious than what it was.
That was Chiefs running back Jerick McKinnon talking about running back by committee and also the hit on Juju Smith-Schuster. So that's your third down back, and sometimes the Chiefs feel like he's the right guy to have in at the end of the game as well, because he's a tough runner. He is good at pass pro. And, I mean, even in the playoffs, He was the best running back in the playoffs for the Chiefs last year. But it was interesting that nobody took advantage of acquiring him on the open market, and he was able to come back at a very reasonable price for the Chiefs, and that's probably why the biggest reason why Rojo sits on the practice squad making tweets about his spot on the team. We will be right back after this with Jeff Chedia on Sports Radio 810 WHB.